all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
I told you we'd make it to Friday. It's April 5th, 2024. Hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Nice to have you along here. A beautiful morning to have you up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network. And if you're listening on the app, watching us through social media, or subscribing by podcast, we are glad to have you here. I have a question for you on this Friday morning. What is Eric Hovde's position on abortion rights? It's okay. It's a trick question because it's been changing, and we'll have the latest example of that coming up in just a bit. We'll cover a lot of ground today, a lot of news stories, a lot of guests along the way. You're always free to join us at 855-75-CIVIC. You can call that number, you can text it, or you can send us a note, radio@upnorthnewswi.com, or leave us a note on Facebook like some of our regular friends. You can get to be one of them. Just go right into that comment section. Tell us what's new, you know, where you are, what you're up to this weekend. Love to hear about your plans. We're going to hear about Greg Bach's weekend plans in just a moment. First, among the other things that we're going to be covering today, before you consider the political positions of a candidate, shouldn't you consider whether he or she is a good person? We're going to use a Wisconsin business leader's recent op-ed to ask 10 questions about Donald Trump, and then we're going to ask him again about a state assembly rep well known for her anti-LGBTQ agenda to help people determine whether people like them are really worth supporting. Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil tells us how the wannabe third-party group No Labels has given up trying to find a presidential candidate, but maybe it's because somebody is already doing their dirty work for them. In our second hour, with an ex-president facing more than 90 criminal felony counts, it can get a little confusing to trace all the criming and all the developments and the possibilities in these courtrooms. Fortunately, we have former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel to join us now on Friday mornings as he gets set for his new Saturday morning legal show, Amicus, A Legal Brief. We'll hear from Mark Jacob on how the media has covered the stories of the week. Dan Schumacher helps us talk about sports. Brittany Merlot will have our forecast as well on this Friday morning, where if I click that button right there, I'll see 6 a.m. temperatures around the state. Up north here, it's about 15 degrees colder than yesterday. Lake Wissota at 24, Hayward at 20, Park Falls 18. And then just about everybody else is where you were yesterday. Wausau at 30, Green Bay 34, La Crosse 29, Wisconsin Rapids 28, Oshkosh 33, Madison 33. And it is 34 degrees in Waukesha, Wisconsin, the home, well, the professional home, not the actual home, of super producer Greg Bach. Mr. Bach, good morning.
Well, actually,
it is my home. Like, I don't live here, but I was born and raised here.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to look for a sleeping bag and a pillow in the corner there when you said you lived here. I mean, not there.
No, not here. Not this room.
There's dedication and yeah. There's foolishness. Yeah. And we only ask you to do so much for us. It's Roy Kent Friday as I hold up my Roy Kent coffee mug that just simply says, oi.
So
while I do that, I'll do what I often do on Fridays and play word association with Greg Bach. Greg, if I say Shane Torres, what comes to mind?
One of the funniest comedians I've ever met in my entire life, both off stage and on stage.
Where could we see him?
Well, besides Comedy Central, Conan, The Late Show, other TVs and other things like that, or last night opening for Mark Maron in Milwaukee. You could see him at the Laughing Tap this weekend for four shows. But unfortunately, if you want to come, you're going to have to go to a late show because both early shows, 7:30 Friday and Saturday, are sold out.
Ooh, okay. Wow.
So tickets are incredibly affordable, $22 online. I'd get them now because they will sell out, but they're $25 at the door, laughingtap.com. No drink minimum. Maximum fun, though.
I like it. Put that on a t-shirt. No drink minimum, maximum fun though.
Yeah. So yeah, he's going to be in, and actually the entire lineup is fantastic. Sam Evans is opening for him. He's his feature, and Sam is a headliner in his own right, but he opens for for Shane, and Sam is just a good guy and very, very funny. And Sasha Rosser from Madison is hosting, so it's going to be a great, great weekend. We're going to have a lot of fun.
That's wonderful. When on a Friday, maybe, let's just pick on Fridays only because you're working your day job and everything. When do you really get going at the club? When do you start to see, you know, either the performers, and when do you kind of get to say, yeah, this is work, but this is also where I get to, you know, be surrounded by some really cool people that I only see a couple times a year?
I mean,
is it like, you know, is this like a 5 o'clock thing? Is it like 10, you know, well, you get the show at 7:30. So yeah.
I get that. I mean, I go there right after I'm done here. So I get there in the afternoon, start cleaning up and do all the things that need to get done. Things get going for me where I'm like, you know, not worrying about most things, and about showtime, about 7:30, you know, getting ready. Cause once the show starts and everyone's there, you know, I'm sitting there, I keep time for the comics. I light them. So I'm just sitting there watching the shows all night, and that's not a bad rap if you ask me.
No, it's not. It's again, like what we do here in radio, that, you know, there are moments of great stress, but there are other moments we get, you know, levity and laughs that other people could only wish they had at their job.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Okay, well, good. I'm glad you enjoy that. Would you indulge me with a personal note for a moment as I look at the calendar today?
Yeah.
And I know folks have heard me talk previously in drips and drabs that, you know, for a 3-year period, we lived on the Caribbean island of Grand Cayman. It happens to be 10 years ago today that we left Wisconsin, not knowing if we were going to come back or not. You know, Sherry took a job there, and we packed up 6 suitcases because that was the most, you know, an airline would let you take. And so we had to very carefully figure out what was going to start our new chapter on an island. And so 6 very full suitcases and a couple of flights later, we land, and the weather's beautiful because it's still April. It would be about another month before we learned the lesson that the Caribbean is gorgeous from Christmas to Easter, but from Easter to Christmas, you're living next to an exhaust vent from hell. It's a little humid, and you will never have dry underwear again. But it was beautiful that day, and I bring this up only to say that it was the scariest thing we'd ever done, but that I think, much like you deciding to help run a comedy club, I think you need to do things now and then in your life that scare the tar out of you, but they're also exciting. And that's definitely what this was. And, you know, moving to another country isn't for everybody, but some kind of a big adventure is.
Yeah.
And you've taken a leap. I've taken a leap. And if that's all I'm conveying to folks is, you know, when an opportunity like that comes up, it's very easy to say, oh, no, that could never work. And we did that a lot, contemplating the move, but then we just went ahead and did it. And I wouldn't trade that 3 years for anything. It was nice to go. It was nice to come back. And I still can't believe it's been 10 years. I don't know where the time goes all this time.
It's important. That's something that I think about a lot. And you know, I think Midwesterners, too, a lot of times will have that notion of like, oh, I can't do that. I shouldn't do that. I got this thing I've got, and I don't want to take any chances. Something could happen. But sometimes you got to take a chance. And I've taken chances many times in my life. And I've been lucky enough where they've succeeded, or if they haven't worked out, it hasn't, you know, ended my, you know, it hasn't broken me financially or relationship wise. So I don't know. I feel like if you're offered the opportunity, at least entertain with a deep interest instead of just sloughing it off and saying, I can't do that.
You're saying, like those 4 famous Swedish philosophers said, you should take a chance. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Their knowledge is above all, in my opinion.
Never doubt the wisdom of Abba. Mm-hmm. And that's the last thing I'll say about that is behind me, everybody sees on the video feed pictures of my family and the state of Wisconsin and a nice little farm scene over here. What you don't see is the wall in front of me has some beautiful photographs that we took from our 3 years down there of the island, of the sunsets, of our favorite spot on the beach. And so some days, if you see me doing this, I'm just kind of daydreaming.
And that's a little bit going, like, Pat, come back. Come back, Pat.
Yes. No, I'm on the beach. Come on. This was
my underwear is so wet right now.
You know what? Then you trade it for a swimsuit if you're going to be wet anyway. And by the way, down there, much like when we were growing up, maybe the transition was already happening for you, but when I was really young, everything was still closed on Sunday. You know, almost everything was closed on Sunday when we were kids. Down there, that's still the case.
Yeah.
There's nothing open. So everybody just goes to the beach because there's nothing else. You go to church and that's it. Grocery stores are closed, everything else. We need that. We need that back here. It's like, here, go to church and then just relax, you know?
Could you imagine that? Like Amazon's closed on Sundays.
Yeah. No, I can't. It's just, it's all go for us now.
Yeah, but absolutely. There is no, like, I don't know. To say be closed on Sunday is almost like, why would you do that?
It's like un-American now, because heaven forbid you be anti-commerce, you know?
When 20, 25 years ago, people would be like, how are you open on a Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
That is terrible.
Mm-hmm. And now there's something, you know, now Chick-fil-A comes into all kinds of grief for not. They're clearly the exception to the rule there. So, all right, just want to make note of that little adventure in life here. At 6:18, here's a quick look at sports since everybody was quiet yesterday and back in action tonight. The Milwaukee Brewers start a three-game series at American Family Field against Seattle. Freddie Peralta will get the start. 6:35 broadcast on News from the Center and Richland Center, WRJN in Racine, Oshkosh Air Support, and 98Q Country in Park Falls. So that's a three-game homestand with the Mariners. That'll be followed next week by a road trip to Cincinnati and Baltimore. As for the Milwaukee Bucks, they are home tonight against Toronto. The broadcast starts at 6:30 on Lake Air in Amory and locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids. So those are that's your sports there as we come up on 6:19. Coming up next, 10 questions about Donald Trump. And then we're going to ask those same 10 questions about a state legislator over her recent agenda. So that's coming up in a bit. But first, a reminder that wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Friday morning, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Do we do the air drums? Sure. I would not call myself the world's biggest Nirvana fan, but I'm always going to turn that up to 11 when that comes on. Noted for melancholy reasons that Kurt Cobain died 30 years ago today at the age of 27. So we'll have much more remembrances in today's history lesson coming up in just a little bit. You're just minutes away from the Friday edition of the Midwest Farm Report, and then Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil joins us. But something that caught my eye in terms of an op-ed recently came from business leader John Torinas in Southeast Wisconsin. And I've met John a couple of times. John, to me, exemplifies the kind of person that I would like to serve in the legislature with or have conversations with, because he comes at things from what is definitely a center-right perspective, and I do from a center-left perspective, but we both emphasize the center. You're looking for common ground occasionally. You know where you disagree, and you either, depending on the issue, you either look toward a compromise or you just wait and see if your particular side of the aisle is the one in control of a legislature or Congress or whatever, and you try to make things happen while being respectful of people with whom you disagree. So I have a lot of respect for John Torinas, even when we don't agree. But I certainly agree with something he wrote recently, where he said, before you cast a vote for president, you should ask a few questions relevant to what kind of a person he is down deep. And so about Donald Trump, he writes these questions. Would you want him to marry your daughter or your sister? Would you want to work directly for him, given that most of his direct reports are now either under the bus or fired or resigned in frustration or headed to prison. Would you invest in a company he controls, keeping in mind that six Trump companies have gone insolvent? Would you share a foxhole with him during battle, the guy who dodged the draft four times and referred to those killed in action as suckers and losers? Would you want him for a trusted friend, keeping in mind that he has no close friends? Would you want him to be your caretaker in a time of personal need, because he seems to only care about one person? Would you want him as a mentor? Would you want him as a teacher? Would you want him as a relative at your Thanksgiving meal? And would you ask for his prayers, given what he's done with the new Bible that he's hawking? And Tarinas writes, if you can't answer yes to most of these questions, why would you vote for this man as president of the United States? He says the same questions can be asked of Joe Biden, who he notes is close to his wife and relatives and has many friends. And yes, Tarinas writes, he is too old for the job, but so is Trump. That's a wash for the two old codgers, he says. Both are showing some memory issues. So am I, Tarina says. So the above questions should be the deciding factors. In short, is the candidate a reliable, trustworthy, caring human being? Let the answers to the above questions be your guide. Now, keep all that in mind as I tell you about a podcast by Courier Newsroom and then a state legislator showing off her sensitive side. And that's sarcasm, by the way. But the new episode of the Vibes Only podcast is out with Brian Derrick and Glennis Mahar. And in this week's episode, they review the complete and total freakout of the far right when the long-running annual Transgender Day of Visibility happened to coincide with Easter Sunday. The meltdown was telling on where people's hearts are. That topic and much more covered on Vibes Only. Find out more at couriernewsroom.com or wherever you get your podcasts. But speaking of that freakout about Transgender Day of Visibility and Easter Sunday, let's hear from State Representative Barb Dittrich of Oconomowoc and the seemingly never-ending sewage that pours out of her mouth when it comes to LGBTQ issues out of her allegedly Christian heart. She has been the sponsor of several bills targeting transgender people, in keeping with a national trend where more than 550 anti-LGBTQ bills were introduced in state legislatures across the country last year, most of them specifically anti-transgender. Dittrich has made wild claims about the number of actual trans athletes competing in sports. She has been called in a Cap Times editorial embarrassing and foolish. And recently on a right-wing radio show out of Wausau, Dittrich gave us this sampler platter of bigotry that I'm going to stop every few seconds. Let's give a listen.
You know, Meg, I'm a person who believes in compassion, right? I have compassion for people who have mental health issues.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that level of compassion. She actually started out the diatribe saying about the Easter Sunday thing as if they, transgender people, weren't in your face every other day of the year. They're not in her face. They're just trying to live their lives. But note how, in her mind, transgender issues are the sign of mental health issues. She continues.
And stunningly, I will tell you, I think the transgender ideology is the only delusion that we see affirmed in mental health care. I just don't get it. We have this whole culture that affirms this delusion of the transgender population. Instead, we should be helping these individuals because it's not healthy. It's not normal. It's not right.
Okay. Again, in her mind, this is a delusion, which really makes me wonder what she would be like if you could put her in a time machine and go back to certain other areas of our nation's history, where, again, if you believed certain things, you had a mental health issue, in her opinion. But it just takes me back to those 10 questions that John Tarinas asked about Donald Trump. It seems like we could apply them here, too. Would you want her to be married to somebody in your family? Would you want her as a relative at your family Thanksgiving meal? Would you want her to be a trusted friend, especially if that friend were to find out that one of your other friends was living life in a way she found to be equivalent to mental illness? Would you want her as a mentor or a teacher? Would you invest in her? Now, she doesn't own a company, but your investment would include the state losing out on, for example, billions of dollars by not providing stable, affordable health insurance coverage to working families in the state. And she's still sitting on a multi-billion dollar state surplus. While nearly 100 school referendums went before the voters this week alone. And then finally, would you ask for her prayers? Or do you wonder who exactly she thinks that she's praying to? Because again, much like the days when somebody who was left-handed was found to be mentally deficient and abused to the point where they finally started using their right hand, we continue to have this mindset on people who are different from you, who may not share your faith, who may not share your gender, who may not share your norms, but they're not looking to be better than you. They're not looking for any advantage. They're looking to no longer be oppressed, be institutionalized for mental illness. They're looking to live their lives. They're not putting anything in your face. If anybody's doing the indoctrination, it's those whose doctrine is rooted in hate and discrimination. Let's pause here. Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil takes us along the way next on this Friday morning. You're up north. Back now on Up North News Radio, and that tickety-tackety, clickety-clackety you hear in the background is a Courier Newsroom national correspondent, Kia Vakil, never not working. Kia, how are you?
I'm pretty well, Pat. How are you?
Pretty good, thanks. You know, for folks that watch on MSNBC, who watch Morning Joe, if they look at the top of the show, I'm sure some people are so frustrated that they're expecting this hit of news and politics, and then they go starting off talking about the Red Sox or the Yankees or anything. And I hate that some days, but I'm about to do it anyway, because you're out in Los Angeles, and I am so curious about Shohei Ohtani going from the Angels to the Dodgers, and whether that is a... Was that a big deal, or is there like a big rivalry between Angels and Dodgers fans that for the time that you've been living out there? What's it like to start the baseball season there?
No, there is no rivalry. I mean, there's a lot of excitement. I live in Los Angeles. There's a lot of excitement about the Dodgers and Shohei Ohtani. You know, I would say the Dodgers are like the team with the most loyal, consistent, strong fan base here, along with the Lakers. But sure. The Lakers fans are, you know, a lot of celebrities. The Dodgers fans are like more of the working class, ordinary folks. And so, no, there is no rivalry. You know, it might be the Los Angeles Angels, but they're in Anaheim. That is anywhere between an hour and 2 hours away, depending on what time of day. And frankly, the Angels are a bit of a laughing stock of a franchise. They've had the best player in baseball for over a decade and have done nothing with him and Mike Trout. They had then the best player in Shohei Ohtani and did nothing with him, and then they lost him. And so I don't know if your audience ever watched Mad Men, but there's a famous scene where, you know, someone tells the main character, you know, basically like, I think about you all the time. And he's like, I don't think about you at all. And that's very much response to the Angels.
It just sounds so unlike, you know, when I think of a metropolitan area, I think of the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Giants, you know, being rivals at times, but there's nothing like that there. Okay. Well, I was just curious as we got the baseball season underway. All right, let's turn to some of the news and some of the most recent developments that deal with, well, we've had a whole bunch of candidates kind of, you know, announce over these past couple of days that they're going to be running for seats in Congress or the legislature. But we actually are going to start with the opposite thing happening on the presidential side of things, and the group No Labels saying, never mind, which I was not expecting to have happen. What's that about?
Yeah, so No Labels is this, you know, centrist group, for lack
allegedly
of a better term,
yeah.
You know, but conservative leaning, that has been talking about for over a year, trying to launch a quote unquote like unity ticket of like bipartisan, you know, centrist candidates to run against Biden and Trump. And they have failed spectacularly. They claim to have raised $60 million and then on Thursday announced they were ending their efforts, pretty much because no one wanted to run on their ticket. You know, Joe Manchin declined. They've reached out to a whole bunch of people. Larry Hogan declined. He's running for Senate in Maryland instead. And so they decided to, you know, stand down. And this is, you know, a pretty big sigh of relief, particularly for Democrats, I think, who, you know, worried that such an effort could make it more likely that Trump would win. And, you know, they still have to contend with Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who was pulling votes from both Trump and Biden. But, you know, no labels ending their effort is, you know, should make everyone happy, frankly, because no one was asking for this.
And yet I am still shocked, not at no labels dropping out, but that Joe Manchin actually turned it down. I thought for sure he would not be able to resist that kind of notoriety.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised, but at the, you know, I also think, you know, Joe Manchin is probably going to go back and might wind up being a lobbyist or, you know, taking
he'll do fine. Yeah,
whatever. He'll do fine. I suspect, you know, someone probably made some compelling arguments to him about, do you really want your legacy to be like handing a second term to Trump? And he's probably like, yeah, that's probably not great for me. So
I guess so. So then it begs this question. Is there also this reason why no label said we don't have to do this? Isn't that they couldn't get a candidate, but they basically already have an alternative who's going to drain votes away. They look at what, you know, Robert Kennedy Jr. is doing and saying, all right, well, let him play the spoiler role that we would have done instead.
I think that's probably part of it. I suspect that's part of it. You know, Kennedy is polling in the, like, you know, teens in most polls nationwide, which is not insignificant. That's certainly enough to swing an election one way or another. And so, you know, and he's got such high name ID, everyone knows the name Kennedy in this country. And so, you know, what would a no labels candidate draw? Like, if you're not getting a really big name, and like Joe Manchin's not a big name nationwide, yes, you know, if you're not getting like a Mitt Romney, like, and there's no demographic for Mitt Romney anymore. That's why he's retiring. So they probably correctly calculated, all right, any third party vote is going to go to Kennedy. So no one wants to run on our ticket. And anyone who did run probably wouldn't get very many votes. So, yeah, I think that's a huge part of the calculation.
All right. Well, now we just wait and see how this Kennedy campaign shapes out. And I just don't know, given a lot of what he's had to say. I don't know that I can see that number growing, but I've certainly been known to be wrong before. People will continue their focus, however, mostly on President Biden and former President Trump. Trump, of course, was in Green Bay earlier this week, in Michigan before that, saying a lot of things that were either hateful or wrong or lying. And, you know, this is somebody who always says he wants to be for the middle class. But, you know, when I look at the stories that Courier Newsroom has been working on this week, you know, Trump's record is hardly what we would call pro-worker.
No, it's extremely anti-worker. I mean, we could start with the fact that he has a decades-long history of not paying people for work that he's hired them for. It's not great, especially considering he has the damn money, or at least he used to. And then you get into actually, you know, what he's done. He has a lengthy record of like speaking critically about unions, which are overwhelmingly popular and, you know, clearly, you know, benefit workers, not just union workers. There's a huge body of research showing that union wages help bring up wages for non-union workers. And so, you know, when he was president, he appointed really anti-union, anti-worker administrators to, you know, the Labor Department, his National Labor Relations Board, which, you know, oversees labor organizing and labor relations. They were really anti-union during his term. His Supreme Court, you know, after he appointed Neil Gorsuch, they ruled in, it was the Janus decision, which basically weakened public sector unions. And so it was just, you know, there's one thing after another. They had their overtime pay rule, which made it harder for people to get overtime. You know, he tried to say he was going to keep an Ohio plant open, a GM plant, and he did not. You know, he pretends to be on the side of workers and obviously is popular with a lot of blue collar workers. But, you know, those jobs were not saved under Trump. Jobs were not brought back under Trump. And really the only time he's like even tried to win favor with unions is for when he's running for president. And then when they endorse Biden, like the UAW did, he goes, you know, haywire.
He trashes them. Yeah.
He trashes them. He doesn't actually care about workers. He just cares about himself. And that's really at the end of the day, what Donald Trump is all about.
And we really see that in his legal fights, you know, that there's still plenty of lawyers who aren't getting paid, which, again, if you know anything about his business history going back decades, this should not be a shock, nor the line. And I think one of the most noteworthy ones, well, apart from claiming he won Wisconsin when, again, he did not. But it's one thing to use somebody's death for political purposes, and he is ghoulishly doing that with a murder victim named Ruby Garcia. But he basically got caught in a lie about, you know, that he'd reached out and contacted their family, and the family said no.
Yeah, I mean, so there's this tragic case in Michigan of, like you said, a young woman named Ruby Garcia who was murdered by, you know, someone she seems to have been somewhat involved with romantically, it seems. And, you know, the person who killed her was an undocumented immigrant. And so Trump, being Trump, has really run with this story and tried to use it to paint a picture that every undocumented immigrant in this country is a killer, which is just factually untrue. You don't see him picking out every story about a white person who kills someone, which happens every day, or about an Asian person who kills someone. He often does it with Black people and with Latino people, though. But even, you know, arguably as bad as that is, he claimed to have spoken to Ruby Garcia's family, and he did not. So he is using their horrifying tragedy that is the worst day, worst week, worst month, worst year of their life to try to scapegoat immigrants. And I think, you know, you can not like politics, you can not like Trump, you cannot like Biden, you can, you know, whatever. But like, that is just one of the most morally appalling things I've ever heard of. And it's not the first time Trump has done stuff like this. Like, he uses and exploits everyone for his own gain.
Without a doubt. But if he's going to win, you know, again, he'd have to do it like 2016 and do it through the Electoral College. And so that takes us, as we whip through some of the states here, in Nebraska, they have a unique system of awarding electoral votes,
yep.
One that I wouldn't necessarily go along with, but it's the one that exists now, and Nebraskans have always kept it in place, but now a few Trump supporters so conveniently want to change it. Can you tell us what the Nebraska system is?
Yeah, so in Nebraska, there's this, you know, interest. Most states award all of their, you know, electoral college votes to whoever wins the popular vote in that state. But in Maine and in Nebraska, they appoint their, you know, electoral college votes by district. And so in Nebraska, there is one district that is kind of bounces between the two parties. The other two are reliably Republican, but there's one kind of centered in Omaha, which is, you know, one of the more liberal, pretty much the only liberal region of Nebraska, or, you know, let's say even approaching liberals, let's say center left. Democrats often win that one. And so that's one electoral vote. And that's, you know, may not seem like a lot in the grand scheme of things, but in a really tightly contested election, that could be everything. And so, you know, one of the paths for Joe Biden to win re-election this year is if he wins, you know, there's only six or seven states that are really up for grabs. So if he wins all of this, you know, if he wins Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and all of the like solidly blue states, he's at 269. He would need one more vote, and that would be Nebraska's that district. If they change this in Nebraska to a winner-take-all thing, which Republicans, some Trump-supporting Republicans want to do, and Biden wins those states, but, you know, Trump flips Arizona, Georgia, Nevada, you know, then we're at 269, 269, and Republicans in the House would get to decide who's president, and we know what they would do. So they would pick right. Trump. And so this is a huge deal. Currently, Nebraska Republicans are not actually put, like, have voted not to pass this bill, but things could change.
Just to, again, when it's convenient to change the rules, is something we've seen here in Wisconsin, certainly. In Iowa, I just want to make sure I'm reading this correctly. The Republican legislature there now has a bill that would limit lawsuits against pesticide makers for causing cancer and other diseases. Again, it sounds too wild to be true, but it I see it in the news.
Yeah, no, it is true. It could soon be law that pesticide makers could not be sued, by people who get sick from pesticides. And so this is what Iowa has a Republican trifecta. It is not a remotely competitive state anymore, unfortunately. And so what you have Republicans doing is gutting regulations. And, you know, the logic, their rationale is, lawsuits are frivolous. These costs of chemicals are going to go up. You know, we got to protect business interests. But it's like, what about people who get sick from pesticides? Like, people get sick from these things. We know that these things can make people sick. We know pollution makes people sick. There is a rise of cancer cases in Iowa. And, you know, it's just a mess. And
it is so reminiscent of like the railroad robber baron era, in terms of the way they govern here. And in just the few seconds we have left, but I'm going to keep bringing it up. North Carolina has a Republican legislature that embraced Medicaid expansion. How well has that sign up been going now?
Pretty damn well. We're at 400,000 people who have
400,000.
Yeah. And that's a huge population. It's just like, I don't know that people can grasp exactly how many people that is, but that's a huge number. And that's imagining that like each of these people may not have had healthcare before. It is well over the population of Madison. These people are now getting to see doctors. They're getting medication they need. People's lives will be saved. And this is something that should exist everywhere, and that it doesn't exist in Wisconsin yet is a farce and a tragedy.
It really is, to not have that kind of stable healthcare coverage. Kia Vakil, thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
You too, Pat.
We'll have more after this. You're up north.
Chim-chim-chim-chim-chim-chim-chim-chiree. A sweep is as lucky as lucky can be. Chim-chim-chim-chim-chim-chim-chiroo. Good luck, we're above when I shakes hands with you.
There's Dick Van Dyke, of course, from the movie Mary Poppins, and it was on this day in 1965 that song won the Academy Award for Best Original Song. Here on today's History Lesson at 6:51.
The music itself is so melancholy. Like, the lyrics are one thing, the greatest English accent ever done by an American, I might say.
Yes.
But the music is just so, like, dour and emo.
Again, if you're a chimney sweep, that's not something, you normally would aspire to. This is your lot in life. And so you've got that kind of melancholy undertone.
Yeah.
Just again, one of the many reasons why it worked. And the mother in the movie there, Glennis, blanking on her last name, was it McDonald? She just passed away somewhere in her 90s. But it was one of the reasons I loved that my daughters liked watching that movie on VHS over and over again was, again, just the whole note that the mom character was all about, winning the right to vote for women.
Yeah.
It was a wonderful little subplot in the movie there back in 1965.
Her name was Glennis Johns.
Glennis Johns, yes. Thank you so much. On this day in 1971, the band Chicago became the first American band, rock band, to perform at Carnegie Hall. Here's a little snippet from it.
As I was walking down the street one day.
Oh, that's Greg, are you? I can't tell from your expression. Is that a good Chicago thing, or I don't like Chicago?
Oh, let me preface. Terry Kath Chicago. After Kath died, there got some good jams in the 80s, some good ballads, like a lot of 60s and 70s bands became power ballad kings in the 80s. But man, Terry Kath Chicago, my gosh.
And now we ask you about the David Foster Chicago.
I can't hear you anymore. I can't hear you. You're breaking up on me there, Pat.
Look, there's Doobie Brothers, Tom Johnson, and then there's Doobie Brothers, Michael McDonald, and they're definitely different, but you can respect them both.
Yeah.
But David Foster Chicago, boy, that's in hindsight, that's a
I mean,
that's a big leap.
When you find out that David Foster basically recruited Peter Cetera and took over that entire band, the two of them, and they were, the rest of the guys were like, I guess
this is what we're doing now.
Yeah, this is what's making us money.
I was going to say, to their credit, they're like, okay, well, the check's still cash. Yeah, right. So that's fine. The number one song this day, 1975, was by the late Minnie Riperton. I always mention this part with a bit of a catch in my throat, but there's always some folks who may not know that at the very end of the song, she just sings the word Maya over and over again. That was her little girl, Maya Rudolph, Saturday Night Live alum.
Minnie Riperton's music is, like, this is a beautiful song, but if you look at the album cover and other songs of hers, she is suggestive.
Yes. Well, welcome to the mid-70s, my friend.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I love it. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And this note right here has been mocked so much because it was the only one like it until Mariah Carey came along.
Yeah.
And I know there was like an episode of South Park and I think others where that note was wired to make something happen, you know?
And I know exactly what it is. I don't really. Yeah, just listening. Yeah, I think you idiot, because you're beautiful. All right.
We mentioned Kurt Cobain died 30 years ago today. This is the anniversary of the birth of Betty Davis, she of Betty Davis Eyes, that Kim Carnes sang about. Born in 1908, passed away in 1989. Happy 50th birthday to Pharrell Williams.
I don't like it. 50? No.
Yeah, 50.
You know, I don't listen to, like, music radio a lot, so I never got this song on overdrive. So I still love hearing this song to this day.
That's good. Yeah, that's good. I mentioned that 10 years ago today, we moved away to live in Cayman for a while. And a couple of days prior to that, we were having a very stressful day packing, and we had some friends over. And you could just tell, you know, all of us were a bit worked up. This song came on the radio in the background, and one of our friends, Chris, she went and turned up the radio, and she yelled at us. She's like, mandatory dance break. And at first, we're kind of looking at her like, no. And by the end of the song, we're all just kind of bopping around. How can you not when that song was on? It's like, was the greatest stress reliever, and everything got better after that. Chris, I love you for that.
I love that idea. It was like, dance, no.
And you weren't going to tell her no. No way. Former Congressman for Northeast Wisconsin, Reed Ribble, is 68 today. Singer Paula Cole is 56. Okay, I don't know. This was not in my wheelhouse at all. This is Dawson's Creek that this was the theme to?
I think so. Yes. Let's just go ahead and say
here. I never, again, not in my genre where my girls were and everything else. So, but I just know some people here, they're immediately triggered. Like, yep. I love that show so much.
Yep. It's the theme song. And it's also like the bedrock track for a lot of trailers and moments of like, you know, pick me up and I'm going to do this. And
exactly. So Paula Cole still cashing the checks at 56. Leona Lewis had her first number one hit in the U.S. on this day in 2008. This day in 1922, the forerunner of Planned Parenthood, known as the American Birth Control League, was founded 101 years ago today. This is National Bell Bottoms Day, so if you heard us talking about the mid-70s earlier, go ahead and celebrate with your favorite bell bottoms. Gold Star spouses, of a nation remains forever thankful to you. National Hospital Admitting Clerks Day, National Dandelion Day, National Caramel Day, National Peeps Day. No, hard pass on the peeps. We talked about that last week. Don't leave them out to get stale and then eat them.
Gross.
Unless you're my wife, then yes, you have permission, I guess. Just go ahead. Just don't make me eat them. And finally, it is Deep Dish Pizza Day, which in other circles would open up such a fight over deep dish, you know, Chicago style, New York style, Detroit style, which is not a real thing. But if you're a fan of the you're a fan of the deep dish, I can have my hot takes.
All right.
You just don't want to say Rocky Rococo. It's just say the brand. It's not Detroit, please. We've got a lot to cover in our second hour. Mark Jacob, Jim Santel, Dan Schumacher, and more coming up on this Friday morning. You're up north.